Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We're leaning forward, we're preparing in an environment where we really don't know ultimately what the size or seriousness of this outbreak is going to be.
That's Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano yesterday talking about what they know and they don't know about the outbreak of swine flu that apparently began in Mexico and has spread. Here are the numbers. The outbreak has killed more than 100 people in Mexico. There are 22 confirmed deaths specifically from swine flu. That's according to the New York Times. More than 1,600 people are believed to have contracted the virus in Mexico. And around the world, there are cases reported really from New Zealand, all around the world, especially here in the United States, where there are 20 confirmed cases in the United States in five states, from California to New York, Ohio, Texas, six cases in Canada. It's too early to say this is a pandemic. It's even too early to say it's an epidemic in Mexico. It is an outbreak. What does that mean? Tom Skinner, spokesperson for the Centers for Disease Control, joins us from Atlanta, where we can hear the activity going on behind him. Tom, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
First of all, let's talk about the numbers in the United States. 20 at this hour, but is that likely to rise?
It is. We'll most likely be reporting more cases later this afternoon. But as of right now, we have 20 confirmed cases in five states. But because we've increased surveillance here in the United States, we fully expect to see more cases in more states. Some of those cases might be severe, and we probably will not be surprised if we actually see some deaths associated with this.
That's pretty alarming, Tom. The Homeland Security Secretary declared a state of emergency or a public health emergency, and then I don't know if it backed off or qualified it by saying it's standard operating procedure. Can you give us some insight as to what a public health emergency declaration means?
Actually, it allows a public, when you state a public health emergency, it allows the government to exercise certain actions that normally aren't allowed. It allows for the use of, investigative laboratory tests. It allows for the release of medicines out of the stockpile to be used by people who may need them. So it broadens the authority of the federal government to take the necessary action that it needs to take to protect the public health. And that's really what it's all about.
So it fast tracks preliminary steps of preparedness. Finally, before we go, remind people what they need to know to take their own preventive measures to possibly, avoid contracting this disease, whatever the circumstances are.
Yeah, I mean, those things that mom taught us as children really do work. Washing your hands, does work. As a step to protect others, we want to make sure we're not sending our children to school if they're sick. If we're sick, we don't want to be going to work and infecting others. And so there really are steps that we can take to protect ourselves, but also protect others. And we really are in this all together, so we do need to take the appropriate steps to protect others as well.
All right, Tom Skinner, spokesperson for the Centers for Disease Control, speaking to us live from Atlanta. Thank you, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Again, he's saying that the numbers in the United States will rise. They expect to make announcements at the CDC later on this morning, and that there may be some deaths or at least a reporting of severe cases in the announcements later on today. Dr. Richard Wenzel is an epidemiologist and is the immediate past president of the International Society for Infectious Diseases and chairman of the Department of Internal Medicine at Virginia Commonwealth University. He joins us from Richmond, Virginia. Dr. Wenzel, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. A pleasure.
Now, based on what Tom Skinner just said, what your mom told you really works in this instance. Wash your hands. Is that the best effort that can be made to prevent infection of this disease by people who are listening and watching this morning? Or should we actually be putting on the masks like the pictures we're seeing from Mexico City?
Well, it's a good question. We haven't had a big scare about influenza for a long time, but in looking back, some studies in SARS actually showed that masks were protective in the Far East. So it may be that if this really gets out of hand, masks will be useful. Certainly in hospitals, we're going to use masks when we as clinicians take care of patients.
Now, you said certainly if this gets out of hand, we're going to put on the masks. As a clinician, what does that mean?
Well, what we're saying is that most of the influenza is acquired by very close contact with people within 3 or 4 feet, where if they talk loud or sing or cough, the droplets that are very large most of the time with flu can get on our own respiratory tract. Now, rarely there are occasional instances where flu looks like it might even be airborne on occasion, just like tuberculosis, where somebody coughs, instead of large droplets that fall to the ground, very tiny droplets like microscopic hot air balloons encasing the virus can actually hang in the air and then later find its way all the way down into the lung.
Now, that we don't know yet, but that would be a disturbing implication if we do discover that that's a mode of transmission. What makes a flu virus deadly? What is it that it does that can be fatal even to people in the prime of life?
Well, it's likely that when young people get influenza, their robust immune system actually takes over and exaggerates the response and actually harms us that way. So that's one thing that happens. The second is...
So let me just stop you there. So people with healthy immune systems are at risk because of the overreaction of the immune system actually resulting in fatality.
Well, you know, certainly we saw this with avian flu, primarily young people with what was called cytokine storm, a storm of our own reaction to the virus. So it's possible that that's what's going on in Mexico.
Let's go to number two, and we have to go to Mexico. We do have someone live standing by there. What's the second instance you were about to mention?
Well, sometimes the virus itself or secondary bacterial infections, such as with staph, can actually get into the lung and cause severe pneumonias.
All right, Dr. Richard Wenzel, thanks so much for putting that in context for us and telling us both to worry responsibly, but also to, you know, realize that this hasn't gotten out of hand yet. Dr. Richard Wenzel is epidemiologist at the Department of Internal Medicine at Virginia Commonwealth University. He spoke with us from Richmond. Joining us now is Joan Grillo, who's a Mexico correspondent for Time Magazine. He's in Mexico City. Joan, it seems as though this disease and the reports of the 103 deaths has really gripped the city psychologically. What evidence do you see on the street that people are really taking matters into their own hands and changing their behavior?
Well, I mean, you see it everywhere. This is for the city, it's like a big nightmare everyone has woken up to. Suddenly you've seen all of the schools shut across the entire urban area of 20 million people. That's the first time you've seen that kind of action since the 1985 earthquake. And people are realizing that the government's really taking things seriously by doing that. That means that everyone, families everywhere, are being affected by this straight away. People are told to take their children out of daycare. Again, that's affecting people right across the area. The bars and discos have been forcibly shut down to stop people going out and spreading the disease. And then on the streets, you're seeing, you know, a lot of people wearing face masks, which soldiers are handing out at street corners. So it's been a real change over the few days of the entire atmosphere of the city here.
And broadly, outside of Mexico City, is there a sense that the nation is gripped by this, or is it pretty much in that city of 16 million or so, a huge megalopolis Mexico City is?
There's increasing problems with the virus across the whole country. It's now in about 17 states of 31 states in Mexico. One state called San Luis Potosí is particularly badly hit. But in every day we're seeing new cases, 2, 3, 4 cases erupting up and down the country, even up to Baja California on the border with California.
Wow. So who is dying as far as the government is disclosing at this point? Do we know what particular populations, age groups, you know, conditions of people in terms of their general health are most vulnerable right now, or is it pretty much up in the air?
No, we do have a good idea about this. I've been down at the Center for Respiratory Diseases. I was down there last night. That's where many of the people suffering from this virus are being held. And we're seeing, talked to family members down there and seeing the people in isolation down there. Most of them are, as the doctor said, most of them are young men and women, particularly young men in their prime. people 30 years old, 35 years old, who would seemingly be very healthy. People who would cycle, you know, back and forth to work, you know, who had physical jobs and should have been in good condition. So, you know, the families were outside very disturbed and very puzzled because it's their key breadwinners, their healthy members, being struck down by this condition.
Wow, Yon Griot, disturbing developments, and we'll wait to hear more from you. Thank you so much for joining us from Mexico City. Yon Griot is the Mexico correspondent for Time Magazine, recapping the story in Mexico, the outbreak of swine flu that has killed at least 103 people.